Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham. Joining me is Bob Porter, and we have a special guest. It is Thursday. It's long overdue. We got the beat writer for Oklahoma State for the Oklahoman. It's Kyle Fredrickson. Kyle, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. A bunch of former Ocala guys getting together. It just feels right.
Yeah, I want to address that, actually, because that was one of the first things that I thought of to talk to you about. You guys are both former sports editors or head editors?
Sports for me.
Yeah, well, I ended up doing both, but yeah, well, I was sports.
And Carson, do you want to tell Kyle about how you fired me, basically?
Oh, man.
I did not fire Kyle. Kyle Porter showed up, and he wanted to write for the school paper, which is like many kids do. And so, unfortunately for him, he didn't realize, and I didn't realize this when I started at the Ocala, they don't just put you on football and basketball right away. You got to kind of like pay your dues. And so Kyle, we had to cover a few, like, I think women's basketball. Is that what you covered, Kyle?
Soccer, women's soccer.
Yeah. Oh, that was my, I was the beat writer for the soccer team. So you were doing exactly what I started doing. And Kyle would write these like Bill Simmons-esque, like soliloquies. I don't even know what they were. They weren't game stories, which is what we kind of needed. And I kind of explained to him, you know, you'll get to write about, you know, basketball and football eventually, but you gotta stay with soccer. And then Kyle showed up again. So he left. He quit. I didn't fire him. But did you have that problem, Kyle?
Some serious tension.
Yeah, I had no idea what I was doing. Just zero clues. Like, I never took a writing class. I never was in journalism or anything like that. I didn't have... I mean, a lot of people would say I still have no idea what I'm doing, but at least I've learned a little bit, like, what a game story actually is.
That's pretty good. You know, I don't know if I ever had to fire anyone in my days, but, you know, I think I had plenty of Kyle Porters who kind of wafted in and out the door and you know, thought they wanted to do it. But, hey, kudos to you, man. You stuck with it, and, you know, obviously it worked out for you. So maybe Carson was wrong for not promoting you up on the B sooner.
Yeah, Carson's my John Skipper.
Well, I always just told Kyle this privately and publicly. Like, I could tell he had talent. I could tell he had a voice. It just wasn't the right outlet for him at the time. You know what I mean? Like, writing soccer, women's soccer stories was, like, not what he should be doing. He should be doing exactly what he's doing now. So I could tell he had an outlet and a voice, but it was not the Ocala at that time. Maybe I should have just given you a column right away, but the problem... if I give Kyle a column right away at the Ocala, my entire staff quits the next day. They're pissed. So I couldn't do that. Like, I couldn't just give Kyle what he wanted right away. I had to make him pay his dues.
Kyle, what was your experience?
Sorry to cut you off.
At the Ocala, and how did you? I mean, is that something that you always wanted to do? And how did that go for you in college?
Yeah, you know, I've been a newspaper nerd most of my life. I mean, if we take it back, you know, I grew up on the Front Range in Fort Collins, Colorado, which is where Colorado State is, kind of in between Denver and the Wyoming border, on the Front Range there. You know, I was a sports editor at my high school newspaper, and then same at my first college, Western State, a little mountain college I went to. And I mean, I just fell in love with it, man. I always knew it's what I wanted to do. So eventually I ended up going to OSU on this exchange program, and it was only supposed to last a year, but the thought was, you know, go to OSU for a year, get a ton of experience coming to Big 12 sports, you know, back home and kind of use that to get a job. But you know, it's funny you mentioned that, you know, Carson said that, you know, Kyle Porter had worked his way up on the beat. Well, I just so happened to get to OSU at a time where they didn't have an established football writer. And it was 2010. So it's like, okay, you know, young, let's throw you on the football beat right as this program is reaching national prominence. And it was just crazy, man. I got that experience that first year in 2010 covering the team. You know, me and Anthony Slater both got there at the same time, and we were working that beat together, and, you know, we've been good friends ever since. And then after that year was up, I basically got convinced to stay at the Ocala and be the editor-in-chief that next year, 2011, and, you know, being able to help oversee some of that football coverage with Anthony on that semester was really just an unforgettable experience, getting to go to all those games. And, you know, here we go. You know, now it's, I think, 5 years going on six. I'm still in Milwaukee, when I thought for sure that I was only going to be a one-year run. So it's been pretty crazy.
Didn't you and Anthony make a book out of the 2011 season? Is that right?
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I was, you know, I just wrote a story for yesterday's newspaper talking to some of those 2011 guys, and so I dug it out of my closet. Yeah, we had the full color, full, you know, big picture book. We have, it's called Ride to Victory, and got pretty much every single story that that Tony wrote. It's basically his book. I mean, he covered the crap out of that team. But, you know, just something we were really proud of, and, you know, no lack of storylines throughout that whole year. So, yeah, man, it was just fun. And, that's the thing, you know, I could have went back home after that year, but I would have been just dumb to, because we saw how good this team was, and there were so many good things to write about. You got this Brandon Whedon guy, he's 28 years old, and it's just the best quote in the history of probably OSU athletics. And it's just like, why would I leave? Why would I go back to my little mountain college, you know, if I could just stay here and keep covering this team? And sure enough, I'm still doing it.
And so tell everybody kind of what happened after so you're covering that team, and then after that, where did you go until you came back to the Oklahoman?
Well, yeah, so I graduated in December of 2012. So, you know, from 2010 to that time, I covered OSU for the Ocali and for Go Post Magazine and some other stuff. And I ended up getting an internship at the Dallas Morning News, where I covered high school football the following fall. So the summer before, I moved back home, and I was actually a landscaper, because I had no money to go move and live in Dallas. So I went back home and did some manual labor I did in high school for a summer, and it was absolutely terrible. I am not built for that kind of job. I was terrible at it. So it made me thankful for my education and knowing I was saving money for something. But then Dallas was great, man. I covered Kyler Murray, at Allen, and, yeah, you know, he just getting his time now at A&M. It's pretty cool to see that. And, you know, football is just such a big deal down there. But, you know, it's kind of hilarious. I had actually agreed to take a job as the high school sports editor at the Casper Star Tribune in Wyoming, right near the end of my internship. Because, man, as much experience as I had, and, you know, I had racked up really good clips, and, you know, I felt like I could compete for a lot of jobs. It is just so tough to get a job in this industry if you don't know someone. So I was ready, man. I was going to go out to Wyoming and, you know, cover a bunch of 120-pound white boys who were crashing into each other, and maybe one or two of them would go to Wyoming, and that would be it. And I was set, man. I was getting hyped for it. I was getting ready, and, you know, sure enough, I get a call from the Oklahoman, and, you know, Robbie Trammell, who's one of the managing editors, he offered me a part-time job on the news desk at the Oklahoman. And at first, I kind of scoffed at it, because I was like, okay, I'm not about to take a part-time news job after I'm at the Dallas Morning News sports intern. You know, maybe it was just me being too prideful at that time, thinking, you know, I deserve something a little better than that. But, you know, I weighed my options, and I really thought about the opportunity at the Oklahoma, and I knew so many people there. You know, I could come back and live in Oklahoma City with my college friends, and there was a lot of things to like about it. And so I just did. I kind of, you know, went on a leap of faith, thinking that eventually something full-time would come up. My parents weren't overly pleased, turning down a full-time job with benefits for a part-time job. But, you know, then Gina Mizell left for the Oregonian, and, you know, I had established enough of a relationship with Mike Sherman to where when that job opened up, you know, he really had liked some of the things that I was doing on news side already, and then some of the sports stuff I had done before. And so it kind of lined up perfectly. It was kind of a matter of timing, because I tell you what, Gina didn't leave. There's no doubt I'd still be working on the news desk right now.
It seems like the Oklahoman and Mike Sherman are really, they're really gung-ho about promoting kids that have, an intern there, have come up through the ranks there. Cause you mentioned Anthony Slater, who you worked with at the Ocali. Now he's the beat writer for the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's astonishing. Is that kind of the way it works over there?
Yeah, it does. I think it's, you know, I don't know if it's just the Oklahoma. I think it's a lot of these big, you know, metropolitan newspapers out there. You know, they want to hire people they can trust, and they don't want to make the hiring process more difficult than it needs to be. I think part of the reason I got the job was just because it was so easy for me to transition over there. You know, I'd covered OSU before. I knew the back end system of how we file stories and some of the, you know, the training that they wouldn't have to give me. They basically pulled me in, and I could just hit the ground running. So You know, and it doesn't hurt that I'm a young guy. You know, that's the other thing. You know, they have a nice little track record of hiring, you know, kids who are maybe just 1 or 2 years out of college. Going back to Gina as well, because, you know, we're real motivated and we don't, you know, we work hard and you don't have to pay us a ton of money. So it kind of works out for them and us in terms of, you know, furthering along our careers and getting us that experience. So, yeah, just super thankful for Mike Sherman. I mean, he's one of the best in the biz, and he's crazy passionate, you know, and it really comes through. And whenever, you talk to him about sports or story ideas, and then he's been great as a mentor and really the guy who's kind of given me a start in this business.
Yeah, I've met him. He's awesome. Very, very kind, very nice. Just seems like a great dude. I did want to ask you there's so many different aspects to your job in terms of traveling and writing and getting stories. What is your favorite part of kind of the mechanics of your job between interviewing, reporting, you know, whatever?
Yeah, gosh, that's a good question. You know, it's the funniest thing that I've learned about this job is that in the moment, it's can be very difficult to appreciate how awesome it is, but it's one of those things where you really can only appreciate it like a few days after a game happens. Cause I mean, I'll give you the Texas Tech game as an example. I mean, people watching at home, like, what an incredible game. Like, you know, it's what a roller coaster, you know, OSU's down 17 early and I'm thinking, holy crap, they're going to lose. This is finally the letdown that we thought might happen. Sure enough, it roared back, and J.W. Walsh has this huge success, and it's all great and fun, but for me in the press box, thinking, like, what is my story? What am I going to write here? I mean, it's really stressful. Even for a 2:30 kick, you know, I'm back in the press box, maybe around 8:38, and, you know, we need to have our story filed by about 9:30, I think is usually how that works. And so it's just you're writing and you're thinking and you're trying to digest and put it out there as soon as possible. It's kind of hard to appreciate it, so as weird as it might sound, the best part of this job is just to be able to kind of relax after it's all done and think, wow, like, what a game, what an environment I've been in, like, what a crazy atmosphere. You know, being on the field at the end of that West Virginia game was just absolutely nuts. That crowd was great. You know, they're playing that scene with Matthew McConaughey from the movie's blanking from me now, Wolf of Wall Street, where he's pounding on his chest and doing the home thing. And then, like, the entire crowd is all doing it, like, with the Jumbotron. You're just like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
Crazy. So, you know, it's just, like, it's moments like that. Like, that's really, for me, what's been the most fun part about this job. Because the writing is fun. I'm always going to love the writing. I'm always going to love, you know, getting to know these players by more than just what the PR guys are telling them to say, learning about their backstory. You know, that's why I love it, because for me, you know, I could easily see myself transitioning out of a sports job one day. It just depends what the opportunity is. I just want to know stories about people. You know, I just want to, you know, be able to meet interesting characters, great stories, and be able to work on a platform where people want to read. For me, that's kind of the core of why I love this job. So that is kind of the biggest reasons. But yeah, I mean, just when you have a season as crazy as this, you know, ask me in a month and I'll tell you how great the year was. As of right now, I'm just kind of tired.
You mentioned how much fun the 2011 season was. I got to cover that team as well. Who was your favorite player to talk to on that team? And what was your favorite moment during that season?
Oh, man. The favorite player one is tough. Like I mentioned before, I mean, Whedon was just so good. He was just in a class of his own. He was so mature. And, you know, I think he just said whatever he wanted to. And maybe, you know, even to a point where the PR staff didn't really want him to say a few of those things, but they were so good and he was so polished that I don't know that they cared a whole lot. But the best moment, you know, I covered most of those games. Like I said, I was the editor-in-chief, so I would travel with those guys at the away games. You know, I was in the crowd for Billum, you know, when we were rushing the field. I mean, that's got to stand out for me. I think one of my favorite memories was at A&M. I traveled down to College Station with those guys, and you know, me and Tony are on the field right at the very end. And Justin Blackman, when he takes that ball back on the last play and runs through the back of his own end zone, he runs right past us. And for some reason, I always remember that. He was running right at us. Me and Tony are like, oh, crap. And we, like, scoot to the side, and he runs past, and the crowd just they don't really know what to think because everyone's like, what the heck did LSU just do here? I mean, I think it took people a second to digest, like, what was happening. But, man, that crowd was incredible. I'm sad that A&M isn't at the conference anymore just because, you know, we can't go cover games anymore over there because those guys, I mean, they do it right. That atmosphere is unlike anything I've ever seen, albeit, you know, there's a lot of different stadiums I've yet to be in. So those definitely stand out. Best interview. It's hard for me not to see Eden. He was so good. But at the same time, you know, Todd Monken was an absolute quote machine. I mean, there'd be days where, you know, as O'Callie kids, you know, if we didn't need to collect a whole lot, I'd just go stand over by Monken and I'd just hold my recorder up there and I'd just sit there for 15 minutes and just to see what he'd say, because everything that he would say was absolute gold and could be applied to something. So, you know, those two guys were definitely great. But yeah, what a fun year, man. You know, I've mentioned it before, but I'm lucky to have come to, you know, Oklahoma at a time when all this happened, because I don't know the heartbreak and the terrible seasons that you guys, I'm certainly remember over the years. You know, my little slice of OSU football that I've gotten to enjoy has been pretty spectacular, all things considered.
Kyle, you said that you kind of grew up as like a newspaper nerd or whatever. What were some of the things that or the publications or writers that you remember reading as you were growing up? And can you remember a moment that made you think, I'd really like to be in this business? Like, that's what I want to do when I grow up.
Yeah, you know, growing up, it's like, you know, I don't want to, like, make this, like, something where, like, you know, my dad would read the newspaper in the morning, you know, I'd grab the comic section, and I don't want to, like, romanticize that part, because that's not how it works. I just loved sports when I was younger, and I at some point I realized I wasn't going to be good enough to play them in college. I mean, it did not take me long to come to that realization. But I also just loved to write. So, I mean, in terms of the writers that I read growing up, you know, I love to read Rick Riley and his back page column and Sports Illustrated and you know, some of those things. And I caught wind on some, you know, Wright Thompson longer features and some, you know, Chris Jones with Esquire, some of those guys pretty early on. And that's what I fell in love with, was just the in-depth kind of stuff, you know, the stories that were about people. Because, you know, even when I was sports editor of the O'Callie, you get so many of these kids coming in who, you know, they want to be, like, you know, sports editor. Like, that was their thing. Like, oh, I just love sports, and I'd love to be, you know, Stuart Scott someday. Like, can I want to write for the O'Callie? And I find that, you know, a lot of those kids never really made it because they didn't love the writing aspect of it. Because at the end of the day, if you're going to be in this business, like, that's what you got to love. You got to love the writing, the stories, and just the people. So that's kind of how, you know, I grew into it, being, you know, a kid, and definitely just consumed a lot of, you know, Grantland when it first came out, and, you know, a lot of that stuff. I'm still kind of sad that they're closing their doors. Just, you know, it's just such a place where writers can enjoy other great writing, you know, as opposed to, you know, the First Take BS that we're exposed to so much with ESPN and all that nowadays. You know, that's kind of the earlier influences, and just, you know, even, you know, today I love anything Wright Thompson or Chris Jones does. I'm going to read, because, you know, those guys in my eyes, you know, they have established, you know, a position in this business where they can just, you know, drive anywhere in the country and write the crap out of anything they want. It feels authentic because you can just kind of tell those are authentic guys. And you know, for me, I love the job I have now, but, you know, if I could transition as I'm not a beat reporter and I can just take on big stories, you know, anywhere, that's what I love to do. But I think I'm one of probably a million sports writers out there who probably says the same thing. So.
What would your dream job be? Just that? Traveling around writing in-depth stories?
Yeah, like I said, man, I do not feel a real strong attachment to sports. Now, maybe that surprises people. It's not really my personality. Even growing up, you know, wanting to be a sports writer, it's not like I was, like, glued to every game. I didn't know every player, every stat. I wasn't, you know, one of those guys. I just love the drama of it all. I love what sports represented and, you know, how it can bring communities together. And, you know, I remember, you know, as a Rockies fan, you know, Colorado Rockies, you know, we have not had many moments in our team's history where people got very excited, but you know, being in Colorado for those 07 and 08 runs, and just everyone was just all of a sudden became a Rockies fan. It was so exciting, and it bonded the community. And I remember watching some of those games in my dorm room freshman year, and, you know, they'd make a big play, and you could, like, hear the whole building just, like, light up with people cheering. And so it was just stuff like that. Like, that's why I loved it. It's just, you know, it's sports are such a powerful, random, crazy thing sometimes. And so, you know, if I got a job in news or features where I could, you know, write similar stories that people would want to read, heck yeah, you know, I'd go do that in a heartbeat, as long as it was something, you know, where I felt like I had that platform and had the ability to do just what I wanted to do. But for now, man, I love this job. You know, there's not many other newspapers or beats in the country that would be a whole lot better on college football. You know, when you add up all the different aspects of what this job brings me, I'm a pretty lucky guy.
Speaking of great stories, Oklahoma State 8-0 TCU this weekend. The question, I feel like I've been just walking around just asking everybody this. I feel like I asked my wife this question. Like, can Oklahoma State really win the Big 12? Is that a real thing that could happen?
Oh man, I think so. I say that also saying that I picked TCU to beat OSU in the paper. I don't think that they're going to be able to contain Boykin to a point where, you know, they're going to be able to hold him enough and then score enough points in turn to beat him. I think it's going to be a close game, and I wouldn't be shocked if this OSU team won, because, I mean, heck, they've proved me wrong already here. You know, and then the way they've been able to win these crazy games. So, but by no means would I be all that surprised that they won. But at the same time, this is just a team that at least has all the pieces. I mean, and that's one thing Evan Epstein told me yesterday, and I was talking to him for that story I wrote in Thursday's Oklahoman about that 2011 team, is, you know, they have the pieces. They have these quarterbacks who can both make plays and all these receivers. And, yeah, they can't really run the ball, but they're figuring out ways to run it and be creative instead of just this north-south thing. And, you know, it appears to be working in a lot of ways. They got a great defense that can force turnovers. It seems like this coaching staff is just top-notch. I mean, kudos to Gundy once again for surrounding himself by guys who really know what they're doing. And, yep, you know, how much imprint that Gundy has on the offense right now, it's hard to say, but it certainly seems like he's kind of loosening the leash a little bit on Yurcich in a way. You know, over the past few weeks, he's, you know, he always kind of talks about, you know, oh, we're conservative. That's me telling him, you know, to be conservative. Because, I mean, let's remember, Yurcich is a guy who was super creative and could do whatever he wanted back in D2. He was crazy successful at it. Now, all of a sudden, we're seeing these, you know, receiver RMs, these double pitches, and you know, some things that we saw in the Cactus Bowl last year, but not during regular season, not, you know, during some of these crucial Big 12 stretches. So, you know, it's just I think they have the pieces, and if they continue to improve, I think they have a legitimate shot. You know, and, you know, it's obvious at this point. We've talked about it, you know, ad nauseum. But you get your heavy hitters at home. You can't ask for anything better than that late in the year when you feel like the team has built some momentum. You know, to have that home field advantage, you know, it's huge in college football. I don't think people realize just how big that can be, especially for a young team that's kind of playing with a chip on its shoulder. So who knows? Like I said, I'm picking TCU this Saturday, but would be shocked one bit if the Cowboys were able to surprise everyone again and win another crazy game.
Yeah, I think I saw they've lost like 6 home games since like 2010 or something crazy like that. So
yeah,
getting
30-6.
Yeah, getting the big three at home, a big deal. I want to ask you about Mike Gundy. Like, we all saw last year when he kind of went into a shell. I think every time you asked him a question, Kyle, he would give like 2-word answers. What's he? Is he as great as he appears to be now? Like, you're there on an everyday basis. I'm not. You guys, I've always envied you writers. You guys get him after the press conference, away from the cameras, and apparently he lightens up a ton. What's he been like so far this year?
Yeah, it's been really incredible, guys. And I'll say it's a pretty complex situation how things went down last year. You know, I'm a new guy on the beat. I am, you know, for the first half of the season, I am just swimming. I'm trying to figure out how to do this job well, how to keep up with the workload. I'm learning it on the fly because, heck, you know, I got hired, you know, right before Big 12 Media Days. So it's like I had been researching the team a little bit, but you don't really learn about the team until you're in there and you're doing it. So you take that into account. you take into account. I hadn't really taken many steps to build a relationship with Gundy because even from the start of the year, he had kind of gone, you know, playing everything really close to the chest. I think he saw that this team was headed for some lumps when JW got hurt. So it just was a perfect storm. And you're right, last year was crazy. I mean, you know, I ended up writing about, like, just Mike Gundy's press conferences, like, three separate occasions. Like, go in thinking, oh, I'm going to write this great story about this player. And then he'd spout off saying something crazy about Boone, or he wouldn't answer questions. And I'd get a call from Mike Sherman and say, oh, no, this is the story of the day. What's Gundy doing next? And so it kind of created a bit of a volatile environment in a lot of ways. But like you said, he has been fantastic this year. I have had absolutely no complaints. He's been great with me. Just in terms of giving access and being personable. And part of that is just he's grown to know me. He didn't really know me before. Even though I worked with Yo Colley, I was just another college punk in the crowd at those press conferences back in the day. You know, I asked a few questions, but, you know, I wasn't that guy who was, you know, peppering him with stuff after post games or anything like that. I was just kind of learning, you know, the ropes at that point. So he's been great. You know, it's really a nod to the idea that winning truly does fix everything. It puts everyone in a good mood. I think that he really likes this team. And when he really likes a team, it's very easy for him to talk about it. And last year, I think he just, you know, he said this before, but I think it's really true. He legitimately had no answers for questions about why they weren't winning games and why they were getting blown out. You know, as stressed about it as OSU fans were, because there just weren't any answers to what were going on. They were just banging their head against the wall. And, you know, I give him a little bit of sympathy. Imagine if every day at your job you had to show up and a bunch of people that you didn't really know that well were questioning you and, you know, something that you're super passionate about. You're going to get mad. I would get mad. I don't know if I would have handled it the same way he did. But I can at least sympathize with that. And, you know, we're seeing a little bit more of the human side of him this year. And, you know, I thought he was fantastic after the crash and in terms of, you know, how strong and composed he was. Because, you know, as a head coach, you know, he has to choose his words very carefully. Everything he says is going to be dissected. That's where, you know, a guy like Linster just says, you know, just whatever, I'm not going to talk about the game. This doesn't matter. Like, you know, and it's great for him to say that, but like a head coach can't take that approach. You know, like a head coach has to come out and make strong statements and be that rock. And he did that, man. And it felt really authentic. And you could kind of see his OSU love being an alum shine through. And, you know, heck, as me as an OSU alum, I appreciated it. I'm sure, you know, OSU fans did as well. So, you know, it does come down to wins. That's the big reason, I think, for his mood adjustment. But heck, maybe he learned something from last year. You know, I would hope he would, in terms of, you know, how you treat reporters and how you handle adversity in those situations. Because, you know, he certainly had his moments last year when it was weird, to say the least.
I do think that people show up every day and question our work. I believe that's called the comments section.
I typically don't read that. One time, the meanest thing someone's ever said to me, I think, maybe nothing. Well, it's the most random and terrible. Some dude told me that I had more estrogen than Jenny Carlson. Someone commented that on a story I read.
Wow.
It's like, come on, dude. Like, you don't know me. Like, one, Jenny is an unbelievable person and awesome, and I know that there's a sect of OSU fans who's never going to forgive her for the rant and all that. But that on top of it, and then like attacking my character for like writing about Mike Gundy's salary, it's crazy, man. Like, people are nuts.
Yeah, there are some, basically anything that I write about Tiger Woods for CBS Sports, the comment section is just, I mean, it's just barrel fire. It's unbelievable. But I did want to ask you, and I think a couple of these quotes have come out as a result of questions you've asked, but I've seen Austin Hayes, David Glidden, Raymond Taylor, I believe even Mike Gundy, talking about how this team in October learned to win close games, and they've started to gain this momentum and this belief that any close game that they're in, they're going to win it. Do you feel like that, how much of that is just kind of coach speak or cliche, and how much of it is like they actually believe that?
You know, some of it's coach speak, and because, listen, this is how it works. These, you know, we get to talk to these coaches and players once a week at a Monday media luncheon, and they put him out on a bunch of stools. And I'm sure right beforehand, you know, the PR guys at OSU are telling these players, are coaching them up, saying, okay, these are the things they're probably going to be asked about. You know, these are this is the way you should approach answering questions. So you're naturally going to get some of that. You know, some of it from some guys feels more authentic from other guys, just because you kind of learn who the real talkers are and the guys who just kind of, you know, are there because they are figuring out if they're like, you know, 19, 20 years old. I put myself in their shoes. A bunch of people are asking me questions about my team. I'm going to stick to a script too, so I don't really blame them. But that being said, man, I think there's something to it. And I think, you know, as much as I don't want to keep pushing this, you know, G.W. Walsh, the hero of Stillwater, the patron saint of OSU, I think it kind of starts with him. He's like this, he is this figure in this locker room who is just so incredibly respected. And he's known for just being so gritty and just never give up, never die thing. He's had all these injuries. He keeps getting put up and down the depth chart. So late in these games, I mean, that's why they turn to him. I mean, it's no secret, you know, when they're going against Texas Tech and they're having him throw, you know, bombs to James Washington at 2nd and 8, you know, on their side of the field, they're doing it because they trust this guy and because I think that, you know, everyone really rallies around him. And that's not a shot at Mason Rudolph. I mean, we saw what he did in Bedlam and in the Cactus Bowl, so he's got a lot of that in him too. But I tell you what, man, when he comes out on the field and he's in that huddle and, you know, he's a fifth-year senior, he's basically a coach on this team. Like, I think legitimately he is viewed in that same light. I think these guys pick up their play. I think they want to play for him, and they you know, they got a little bit of success early in the year in these close games. And that's just naturally going to build confidence to a point where, you know, if they're down 10 against TCU with, you know, 5 or 6 minutes left, I don't think anyone's going to flinch. I think they're going to go with JW in some crunch time situations and just kind of hope he can will this team to another crazy finish. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if that situation once again, you know, appears when we're watching this team on Saturday and what should be a great game. But yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things in sports that's easy to just like brush off as a cliche because, you know, we hear this kind of crap all the time about, you know, not giving up and being confident and all this stuff. But with this team, I mean, they've at least proven it to this point. You know, we'll see what happens in some of these real big home games. But there's no doubt that, you know, even compared to that 2011 team, like Evan Epstein told me, they have some resolve. They've faced adversity and they've overcome it. So the next time it comes, you know, they shouldn't at least be surprised by it, I wouldn't think.
Kyle likes to call Walsh the general, and I'm jokingly saying if he gets a 6th year of eligibility, he's going to be the commander in chief. Will he get a will he get a 6th year? And will Mason Rudolph petition against that?
That's a great point. You know, I'm actually waiting on word back from an OSU spokesman to get me like the actual details of what the redshirt application process is, because it's kind of complicated and I've tried to look it up online, but it's like I don't know what source it's coming from and if it's legit, so I'm still trying to figure it out myself. I did ask JW about it a couple weeks ago. It was kind of the very last question I just threw in just to see what he'd say. I said, you know, hey, have you thought about coming back for a 6th year? And he, you know, he played it off. He said, oh, I haven't thought about it yet. That's something at the end of the year I'll have to think about. But right now I'm only focused on this year. So who knows? There's one side of me that thinks, heck yeah, he's going to come back. Why would you not? Because of how stacked this team appears to be on offense next year. You know, you bring back all these offensive linemen. You know, you lose Brandon Shepherd, but you got all these receivers coming back. You got Mason. I mean, how good could this two-quarterback system be, you know, with another year of work? But at the same time, J.W. Walsh does not think he's going to the NFL. He, you know, he does not need to, you know, boost his playing career with stats and tape to where he thinks he's going to go on and play at the next level. I mean, this guy is going to be a coach. You know, whether that's going to be here as a GA next year or somewhere else, I mean, that's what this guy is going to do. Like, it seems like that's what he was born to do. So maybe he doesn't want to delay that process. Maybe he thinks, you know, why play another year when I know this is what I'm going to do? And, you know, I would surely think that OSU would be the first to give him that opportunity, you know, to do that. And, you know, starting out at a place like OSU at this level, first year in coaching as a GA, I mean, why would you turn that down? Why would you want to go anywhere else? So it's hard to say what he's going to do. We'll find out probably at the end of the year. But with Mason, man, I don't know. He's also said all the right things in those media things, but I guarantee he did not sign on to come to OSU to be in a two quarterback system for two of the 4 years that he would be here. So it's hard to say what he's really thinking right now. I think that as long as this team is winning, he's cool with splitting this time. But when you're an NFL prospect who wants to go out there and prove to people what you can do, it's got to be maybe a little uncomfortable. But Mike Gundy has come out and said this and hasn't directly addressed it as a Mason issue, but it is him. Gundy saying that it doesn't matter what your stats are in college. If you can play at the next level, scouts are going to find you, and that's true. But at the same time, Rudolph wants to build more experience, and if he keeps getting taken out of the red zone, it's like, when is this guy going to, have time to practice his red zone sets and his red zone reads and how you function in those situations? Because as of this point, more than half of the time he's getting pulled out of those games. And I don't know, that's probably not something he's even concerned about, but you wonder, if that's going to impact his development at all. So just a really weird situation. I don't think it would work, if Walsh wasn't such a veteran respected leader, because no one on that team is going to say anything when he goes in, one, because they trust him, and two, because he carries that weight in the locker room. And I think that's really what makes this whole thing work.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. All right, Kyle, we'll get you out of here on this. We've kept you too long, but we appreciate it. December 1st, Oklahoma State season is over. What is their record, and where do they end up going to play in a bowl game?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I'm going to say that they win one of these tough games down the stretch. I think they lose. They end up with two losses in the season. If that happens, if my calculations are correct, I think that would put them in the Alamo Bowl. That would be my guess. Because I think if they lose one, I think they go to the Fiesta. They win out, they go to the playoff. If they lose three, they probably go into the Russell Wilson Sweatpants Bowl or whatever the heck
the
that
Russell
one's called
Wilson.
Out in Orlando. whatever it's called. So we'll see. I don't know. I would say this would appear to be a two-loss season in an Alamo Bowl, which would be fun. I love San Antonio. I went down there for a U.S.-Mexico game with my brother last spring, and I think it's a cool city, and the Riverwalk is great. It's kind of funny. As a reporter, those are the kinds of things that I'm worried about at this point, where I get to go for a week in January. So that's kind of my thought process. But, hey, who knows, man? This could be a team that could surprise, and if they ended up going to a Fiesta Bowl or a Sugar Bowl or something along those lines, it would definitely be a lot of fun.
Sounds good, Kyle. Hey, man, appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the podcast. We'll have you again later in the season.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Kyle.
That's your goodbye? Thanks, Kyle. That's all you got?
But my kids were screaming. I was distracted.
Okay, yeah, you sounded flustered.
Yeah, I was. yeah, that was an awkward ending. I don't know what happened there. I felt like a first date that's not ending in a second date.
You're like, thanks, Kyle.
is the Alamo Bowl a disappointment for Oklahoma State at this point?
I don't think. I mean, at this point, probably yes. But if you look at the way it started the season, what, 10-2, Alamo Bowl? I think that's considered about right, isn't it?
Well, I think we forget that 2010 team went 10-2 and ended up in the Alamo Bowl. Like that's not it. Like the Alamo Bowl, I feel like sounds bad. Like it just doesn't carry a great.
No, but it's one of the upper tier bowls.
Yeah, it's
a good spot. That 2010 team is held in such reverential tones. They let Taylor Martinez throw for like 800 yards against them, and they lost two games. People forget that just because they had Whedon and Blackman.
Yeah, and people also forget that I still think of the Holiday Bowl as being elite, but the Alamo Bowl has really replaced it as kind of that, the one below the Cotton Bowl is – well, I guess the Cotton Bowl is on a different plane altogether now, but
Holiday used to be big time. Now Holiday like is nothing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, because we think of Barry Sanders and the Holiday Bowl and all that and everything. But Yeah, Kyle was great. I really enjoyed that. I didn't realize that he was so interested, I guess, in non-sports style news. I thought that was really, really cool and good to hear from somebody like that.
Yeah, and I forgot he actually got his start in news with, like, the Oklahoman. Yeah. So that was interesting to hear. He's done a great job. I mean, it's fascinating to me. Like I mentioned, both he and Anthony Slater were students at OSU. Whoops, sorry. I'm banging stuff around my house now.
Wow.
It's fascinating that they both went from the Ocali to now they both have, you know, some of the lead jobs at the Oklahoman. That to me is really cool, and it's cool to see some Ocali kids done good, just like you and I.
Well, and
which I can consider you an Ocali kid, yeah, even though you quit on me.
I submitted like two stories and like 5,500 words.
Yeah. Those are in the archive somewhere.
And those are, it's well deserved. Like him and Slater are both, they both do a really good job. They both work really hard. Like you can tell, you know, like I don't know. I feel like there's this like, idea that if you're an intern or if you just stay around long enough or whatever, you'll move up. But I feel like both of those guys have really deserved it. And, you know, continue. I mean, is Slater going to be like the lead NBA writer for ESPN at some point?
I think so. I think he's on his way, man. It's, he's already, how old is he? Like 25?
I think he
does like NBA TV segments now. He's rocking a suit to games. He's big time now. So it's fun to see, where he's at nowadays. Cause he's a good dude. And I've hung out with Kyle and Anthony a bunch. So it's, I'm happy for those guys. And you're right. I tell everyone, I go back to OSU sometimes and talk to the old broadcasting classes I used to be in myself, and I stress to them it's important to intern, but also too you have to like make your own luck, and those guys have. You have to prove that you can do the job. You have to prove that you want to, and you got to prove that you're good. And so they've taken advantage of their opportunities, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely.
You looking forward to TCU Saturday? This is big time, man.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be good. You know, I love Gundy's quote on Monday about. He said, you know, Boykin's tough, but I can't remember what the exact quote was. I think he said something like, I can't imagine us not playing well. And I agree. I don't know if they're going to win, but I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Do you think Baylor could lose to Kansas State tonight? Am I crazy for thinking that?
I don't think so. I think Baylor will win by 3 touchdowns. I think Kansas State's terrible.
And it's Thursday night. I mean, you know.
I think that Stidham guy is going to throw for about 300 yards and 4 touchdowns. Well, I think he's going to be good.
I think he's really good. I wanted to talk to you about, real quick, the playoff rankings, because we did not talk about that on Tuesday because they came out on Tuesday night. Were you surprised?
I was – disappointed. I really was. I'm so tired of Alabama. I'm just so tired of this narrative that it's someone had a great tweet the other day. I can't remember who it was.
Yeah,
like,
I'm pulling it up.
Every commentator and analyst, you go ahead and read it.
It's Cart Matthews, who I follow on Twitter, at Cart Matthews. College football analysts operate from the assumption that Alabama is the best team, and any data thereafter piggybacks that truth.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's perfectly said.
I mean, it goes back to 2011. Like, remember 2011, OSU, they had the worst loss, right? They had the worst loss to Iowa State, and that was the judgment.
Yeah.
But then you look last year, Ohio State by far has the worst loss to Virginia Tech. Then it doesn't matter because they're Ohio State.
Well,
and I'm just so tired of this narrative that of Alabama getting the benefit of the doubt from 4 years ago. Like, this is a totally different team.
That's my whole thing. What are the criteria? Like, you're introducing this wins over better than 500 teams and, like, losses against top 25. I mean, I don't think anybody knows what the criteria – I don't think there are criteria. And that's what happens when you introduce this subjective way to pick teams, and it's just that's what it's going to be. That's the nature of it. And unless it's an objective, hey, you won your conference, you're in the playoff, then this is going to happen, and it's going to continue to happen. And I think the Big 12 is going to get left out this year.
Well, and how in the world, like, even in the SEC alone, how is Florida as far back behind Alabama as they are when Florida's only loss was at LSU? And Alabama lost on their home field to Ole Miss, who got beat soundly by Memphis, who's undefeated. How is Alabama ahead of all those teams?
Well, Alabama,
it's because of their name and it's because of their logo. That's all it is.
They beat Wisconsin. I mean, that was good.
Oh, well, whoop-dee-doo.
I mean, I wrote this. If TCU or Baylor is where – I mean, why? How is TCU 8? That's absurd. Like, they've won good, like, difficult road games. It's not easy to go to Manhattan. It's not easy to go to Lubbock. They won at those two places. You know,
are your kids okay?
Yeah, I don't know. It's not good. I'm gonna need to go soon. They go to Minnesota. They win there. Like, there's just such a perception, like a natural perception that Auburn is better than Minnesota every year. Like, just because they're Auburn and just because Minnesota is Minnesota, and it's like that's not true. Like, just look at. I mean, OU going to Tennessee and beating Tennessee, it happened in the last second, but Alabama barely beat Tennessee at home. Alabama is not that good. I agree with you.
And the assumption that the SEC is the best conference is just assumed. It's not this year. It's just not. And I thought Barry Trammell had a great column about it, how the arena football aspect of Big 12 hurts it for some silly reason. Bad offense is not punished as much as bad defense. And that, to me, is just idiotic. I mean, it's bad on both sides. Why? Because the SEC has terrible quarterback play and the scores are lower. That means their defenses are better? No, that doesn't mean that. Once the SEC finally learned spread offense and had decent quarterbacks, there were shootouts every week. I remember Georgia and Tennessee had a game in the 50s.
Yeah.
But where were the big bad? And the thing that irks me the most, everyone overlooks the fact Texas A&M and Missouri, who were average at best in the Big 12, went to the SEC and had instant success.
Yeah.
Instant success. That, to me, should slow down this narrative that every single year, no matter what, the SEC is the best conference.
And Jeff Long saying that a well-balanced team is better than a good offense. It's like we're not even evaluating wins and losses. Like, we're just looking at teams and picking who we think are the best ones. And it's like,
well, the narrative will change based on who they want in. And the fact is, they want blue bloods in who make a lot of money and will bring a lot of fans in. They'll just change the narrative, whatever it is.
But why is Ohio State in the top four? Wait, have you looked at their schedule?
Yeah,
it's awful.
Pretty bad.
It's awful. It's been equivalent to Oklahoma State's, if not worse, you know. But because they won it all last year. I mean, they haven't even dominated. If you look at Baylor, they've dominated. They've had a bad schedule, but they've rolled. And I don't understand why even Ohio State is in the top four. And it goes back to not understanding the criteria. And like you said, it changing based on who they want to get in or who is perceived as should be getting in. And it's
all you got to do is look at Memphis. They're Memphis. They're not in a Power 5 team, but they have a better resume than just about every team in front of them. And that just shows you, I mean, they're just going to pick big names, blue bloods.
Yeah, but they're...
It's about the helmets.
Memphis' schedule is not that great, though. Have you looked at it?
Yeah.
I mean, they beat Ole Miss. That was good. But they played, like, Tulsa and, I mean...
So's OU. OU's played Tulsa.
Yeah.
You're right. And Bowling Green's a dang good team. They beat them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know. True. It just seems to me... They're going to pick who they want to pick, and the criteria will change based on who they want in.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason Alabama should be four. Zero.
Yeah.
So, I think the Big 12 might get left out. If the Big 12 has one loss and gets left in, I think they're getting left out as long as Clemson and Notre Dame went out.
Yep. I think unless it gets crazy, which surely it will, I think just because of the nature of all these Big 12 games, I think they will get left out because I think everybody's going to lose. I really do.
I do too.
And strangely, it's OU, which lost to Texas, that could have the best chance of getting into the playoff of any Big 12 team.
That's pretty crazy. Did you see my three-way tie scenario?
No.
Well, I think OU would have to lose twice, which I don't know if that'll happen or not. But I think if you have a three-way tie between OSU, TCU, and Baylor – I asked what the criteria was, and Jason Kersey from the Oklahoman sent me a link. It goes from, like, the cumulative record against the opponents, which they would all, I think, assume would be the same, scoring differential, which means, okay, you have carte blanche to run it up. No class involved. You need to win by as many points as possible.
So I would go to Baylor.
And if they're still tied, Kyle, do you know what the final tiebreaker is? A draw at the Big 12 office.
That's made for TV right there.
How
that's
ridiculously
awesome.
Perfect would that be for
that,
this conference?
That would be.
Who gets to pick it out of the hat? Les Miles? Do they pull off the big the top hat off Les's hat and like he's a neutral party. He can draw it out.
Gundy would probably hand him his visor to put him in.
Jeez. That to me would be – I'm almost rooting for that scenario now, just a draw at the Big 12 office.
That would be amazing. It'd be amazing to have to calculate what the point differential would have to be going into the final week.
I know.
And rooting for you're going for two against OU to win it, you know, like up 20. that'd be awesome if Oklahoma State was up 20 on OU. But, okay, you're going to Stillwater this weekend. Is that right?
I am, and I think I'm picking OSU to win.
I think I am, too.
You picked against them last week.
Yeah, I did.
Leave her now?
Well, I'm caught up in this home road thing. And Oklahoma State, like you said earlier, has been great at home, 30-6 since 2010. I think two or three of those losses came last year.
When they didn't have a pulse, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they're going to bring it on Saturday. I'm worried about Jimmy Bean not playing. That's kind of up in the air right now.
Yeah, they're beat up on defense.
Yeah, they are. But if Peterson can play and at least, you know, I thought Jake Trotter made a great point. We forget that Peterson shut down Kevin White for West Virginia last year. I don't know if he can do the same with Josh Dotson, but I think he can at least hold his own. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting. It should be fun.
Oh, it's going to be electric. I can't wait. I'm a little upset it's not a night game, but it'll still be rocking no matter what.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, have fun. We will reconvene at the beginning of next week.
Sounds good, man.
Okay, bye.